How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.
Welcome, everyone, to Couch Potato Diary. Happy Thursday. My name is Peter Klein. Thank you very much for tuning in today. We got a lot to talk about as the conference finals well underway in the NBA and in the NHL, and they continue tonight in both. We will talk about all of that, plus the CFL previews continue. So there is a lot to cover on the show today. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. Let's get right into it and start talking some basketball. All right, the Dallas Mavericks step up and win game one of the NBA's Western Conference Final. And this was a very impressive performance from the roadside, the Mavericks, in this game. The big players, I thought, really came to play, literally and figuratively big players. We'll get to that in a little bit. But for Luka Doncic, he was his usual, regular, awesome self. His reads and passes are just fantastic. We talked a bit before about how Jokic was like a computer program. Like, if yes, then this. If no, then this. Luka has such a feel for the game and such an understanding of where he can get passes to that no one else even expects you to. And he was tremendous in that, and his understanding of what he can do, his ability to get out of things when he is in danger, all of that was on full display. And Rudy Gobert is legitimately one of the best defensive players in the history of the National Basketball Association, and Luka toyed with that man. He picked Gobert apart in the pick and roll. Some of those lobs, he was just messing with him. There was no right answer for Rudy Gobert in how to defend Luka Doncic, who I thought put on a masterpiece in game one. He did a good job of drawing Rudy away from the basket. Rudy would kind of do that drop coverage, and Luka's like, okay, I know how to handle this. And he'd get in close enough to the rim that Rudy would have to make a move. It's a lob over top. It's a yam. And all of a sudden, the Dallas Mavericks are cruising. And so Luka did such a good job of messing with Rudy Gobert. And we haven't really seen these entire playoffs you can play Rudy off the floor in the postseason. I'm not saying we are at that point. And if we are, the Timberwolves are fucked. I'm not saying we're at that point, but it was getting to that point in game one. And the other part of it, the Robin to Luka's Batman, was on full display as Kyrie Irving was excellent. If you get that Kyrie for another month or so, this Mavericks team can win a championship. That's how good Kyrie Irving was, and that is how good he can be. He was attacking this game so well, and he was reading it so well, and I don't know if he gets enough credit for how smart he is out on the basketball court because all the stupid things he says off of it, but he attacks so incredibly well. And again, just his reads and his understanding of what the defense is trying to do and his ability to just find openings and be able to attack, his speed with the ball and his knowledge of like when to accelerate, when to ease up, when to go, when to not. It's almost second to none. He is such an amazing player. And I will admit, I have definitely overlooked this guy over the last couple of years. Like, oh, well, it's Luka and Kyrie. It's like, yeah, it's Luka. And part of it too is how frustrating Kyrie can be away from the court. But when he is on, there are very few in the National Basketball Association who are better than that guy. And when they're both on at the same time, this is a championship caliber basketball team. He makes them that. And the work that he was able to do in blowing past McDaniels and making Edwards really, really work on the defensive end was on full display. Just such a high level basketball player. And then the bigs showed up. Lively and Gafford both had very big moments, and a lot of that thanks to Luka for sure. But those guys knew what they were supposed to do in the Luka pick and roll, and defensively they helped force Minnesota into a three-point heavy attack, which is not exactly what Minnesota wants to do. And I'm not just saying that they only shot those threes because Gafford and Lively were there, but I do think that is part of it a little bit in forcing Minnesota to the outside, but their work in those pick and rolls is going to be monstrous in this series. And if they can just kind of play that role, because Luka, he is so good, but you have to know what you're doing when playing with that guy. And Gafford already being at that level with him is quite impressive. It was just all around such an impressive showing from the Dallas Mavericks. I loved what I saw from these guys. On the Minnesota side, they need better from their best. Anthony Edwards, quite frankly, wasn't good enough on either end. And the Dallas Mavericks made him work. And that's going to be a very interesting thing if he is wearing down, because this is, we're late into it now, right? College, rather famously, ends early April, March. As well, you know, the whole tournament, madness. So he hasn't played this long, and the Timberwolves didn't get this far last year, so that this is now into the depths of the NBA, and I think we are starting to see him wear down, and the Mavericks have a team that is going to be really difficult on him if he is wearing down, because they're going to need, if Minnesota is going to be successful in this series, they need him either on Kyrie or on Luka. And Kyrie made him run around and work. And Luka will just body you for 48 minutes and really wear you down that way. And Dallas, I thought in game one, did a really good job of kind of enforcing what they want and wanted to do on this kid and putting a lot of pressure on him, whether it was with the running or with the physicality or whatever it may be. They did a really, really good job in messing around with him in that sense. And then on the offensive side, he wasn't he got off to a good shooting start, but he was so uninvolved in the second half. Reggie Miller was wondering if he was hurt. Now, you take what the guy who compared Rudy Gobert to Michael Jordan with a grain of salt, and I understand that was maybe a little bit tongue-in-cheek with the switching hands or whatever, but still, they were wondering, like, where is this guy? Why is he so little a part of things? And that really allowed Dallas to pull ahead, especially in that fourth quarter when the Mavericks started to pull away. And credit to Minnesota, they were able to get it back thanks to, in part, a Karl-Anthony Towns three. But they need this guy. And they need him on both ends. Like, they didn't get past Denver without him, or they don't get past Denver, sorry, without him attacking, without him shooting, and without him defending. And he did, like, half of three. Not, like, 1.5. Like, he did 0.5 out of three on that. He simply wasn't good enough, and he was picked apart all game, and this was a real learning experience for him. There were some positives for Minnesota. McDaniels was great, but it does feel like a bit of a waste that you had that good of a shooting day from McDaniels, and you still lose. But I thought that he did quite well, and he did what you could expect anyway when he was on Luka and Kyrie. But I think for Minnesota, they now know what to expect a little bit more. They know the physicality that Dallas can play with. They know the speed that Dallas can play with. And they know the cerebral attack that Luka is going to play with. Now, it's easy to say, well, now they know. Now they'll be able to handle it, because these are some of the best basketball players in the world that they are going up against. But at least Minnesota kind of has that feel for what this is now. And one more note on Minnesota. I thought Cat looked good in this game. He's hitting deep. His defense was fine. And he was attacking at the rim. Big putback dunk in this game as well. But when everything is running through him, that's not how this team is going to be successful. So an eye-opening game one, I think, for the Minnesota Timberwolves, and a really impressive game one to steal home court advantage away by the Dallas Mavericks. Tonight, it is the Boston Celtics taking on the Indiana Pacers, and we'll see what the Pacers have in game two after they controlled most of game one, but late game execution really came back to bite them. Do they learn from this, or do they crumble? I'll be very interested to see what game two has in store. The thing that I didn't really get into a whole lot, but one thing I think we see a lot more tonight is Indiana going right at Al Horford and kind of forcing Joe Mazz to make an adjustment in the types of lineups that he is putting out there. Sounds like KP is game four at the earliest. If they can just play Horford off of the floor, I don't know if Boston really trusts like a Tatum at the five or anything like that. This would be an opportunity for Indiana to really go after them in that way. And again, with the guys who we talked about in game one and leading into this series, right? It's Siakam, it's Turner. Can those guys play Horford off of the floor? I'm going to be very interested in that, and I'll be interested to see how Boston counterpunches tonight. The Pacers, quite honestly, seemed like the more prepared team going into game one. It still wasn't enough to get the win, but they looked like they were the better team, better coach team, I should say, in game one. We will see now. I would imagine Tatum has a really, really good game tonight for the Boston Celtics. Speaking of coaching, the Cleveland Cavaliers have let go of J.B. Bickerstaff, and I say this all the time. I am not a big blame the coach guy, but this one you kind of felt coming. There was the Athletic piece. The second the clock hit zero, I think it was Ryan Russillo who was joking about it, saying that like they didn't even bother updating Mobley's stats for game five. Because it was just like, no, we're just going to throw this out there. It's done. You kind of knew at that point that this thing was going to be gone. And look, like this is a good roster, right? With Allen, with Garland, with Mobley, and with Mitchell. This is a very talented top four. It never really felt like Bickerstaff, like Bickerstaff had a real feel for this team and really knew how to fully unlock what they had there. Once anyone got hurt, it was like, okay, now we know what to do. And they were able to get it rolling. But with the four, he didn't really have it figured out. And I didn't like how they handled the end of the season, kind of tanking to get Orlando in the first round and then not showing up for a couple of games against Orlando, forcing that series to go seven. If you avoid that, like maybe it happens against the Knicks in the second round anyway, but you at least avoid the Celtics until the conference finals. And then maybe you're in this spot right now and honestly, probably saving your job. But I don't think he's a bad coach. But I don't think he's a great coach either, and I think this team needs a coach that will be able to get them over the hump. But this is the start of a really interesting offseason with the Cleveland Cavaliers. Like, I think you have to move Mitchell. It's very obvious that there you can't really do Garland and Mitchell. I think Zach Lowe said on his podcast today that he has it at about like 5 or 10% that those guys are on the same team. And I just... if you get rid of Garland, there's a chance you come out of this with nothing. And now you'll get a lot. Like, Garland to San Antonio fits perfectly. There are so many teams that could use... like, Garland, I don't know how the trade would work, because Phoenix doesn't have anything. But Garland is the perfect fit for the Phoenix Suns. Or for San Antonio. I even think he'd be good with the Lakers. Like, he is a talented basketball player. He'd be good anywhere. But... so you're going to get something in return for him. But I simply don't trust signing Mitchell to an extension and then believing that he's going to want to stay in Cleveland for 4 years. I don't trust that. And so to me, you have to move Mitchell, build around Garland, and go with it that way. Because otherwise you risk losing both and you're kind of back to square one. At least with Garland and Mobley, you have a core now that is set. And look, like Allen played well when he was healthy and there were some questions of his toughness, but I have always liked this player. The two big thing hasn't really worked the way that they want it to. Mobley, this is a big year for him coming up. He needs to develop, I think, into the guy that a lot of people thought he was going to be after his rookie season. That has kind of flatlined a little bit. He needs to step this up now. If he can specifically work on the outside shot a little bit, then you have something there offensively where it's not so bogged down in the middle. If he can kind of expand that range and spread the floor a little bit, defensively, these guys could lock things down. But this is an interesting offseason for Cleveland because, like, if Mobley isn't going to expand that game, he's still quite good, but you have to get rid of Allen then. And again, building around Mobley and Garland isn't the worst place to be. It does feel like maybe this year is a step back for Cleveland to take a step forward, but they aren't super far away from being a dangerous team in the NBA's Eastern Conference. Okay, let's shift gears now and talk some hockey as the New York Rangers stumble against the Florida Panthers in game one of their Eastern Conference final.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
That was an excellent showing by the Florida Panthers in game one. All aspects of the Panthers game were on point in their 3-0 win over the New York Rangers in game one of the Eastern Conference Final. Offensively, created a lot of pressure, which turned into opportunities, which turned into a couple times goals. Defensively, I thought they did a really good job of limiting the Rangers, especially early in this hockey game. Bobrovsky was excellent, and the penalty kill did really, really well as well. Let's start with the offense. I thought it was a versatile offensive attack because they were able to get a couple of looks off of the rush. That is how Matthew Tkachuk scores the first goal, is off of the rush. But they also played a really heavy game down low. That cycle was working for them. And their forecheck came in and created a couple of turnovers that really helped them get the ball rolling early, and I thought did a really good job of taking the Madison Square Garden crowd right out of this game. As early on, they had the jump that you would expect from the home side, the Rangers, in this game. They were the ones who were going out there, running around, causing problems for New York, and then New York was turning the puck over all over the place, creating some good opportunities there for Florida, and like I said, kind of taking that crowd out of it. Like, they can play really heavy hockey, but they can also play with on the rush as well. Forsling, an excellent job, good positioning, and excellent skating, was able to cut off that Panarin rush, force Panarin to stop up. The back pressure from Ekblad creates the turnover, and Forsling then rushes up ice. He's the one who drops the puck off to Tkachuk, who ends up scoring that goal. So they're able to use that rush game and that transition game really, really well as well. On the defensive side of things, they made life really difficult for the New York Rangers. Zone entries were a problem for the Rangers early on. Again, New York started to find their game late, but for most of this game, it was the Florida Panthers who were really clogging things up. It was difficult for the Rangers to get set up offensively, and then when they did, it felt like there was 9 guys out there for Florida. Passes weren't able to get through. They weren't able to really take advantage of the skill that the Rangers have, that playmaking ability of Panarin, the ability that Zibanejad has to make players around him better, and they put a lot of pressure on the younger players like Lafreniere, Hedl, and Kako to make some plays, and they didn't always make the right ones. So I thought defensively, it was really, really impressive what the Panthers were able to do in limiting what the Rangers skill players could do. And then if you got through all of that, Bobrovsky was really, really good. His quickness post to post is still so impressive. And there was one, like Gustafsson, the pass to Kako, like I get wanting the one-timer going post to post, but that was so far over to the side. Bobrovsky had time, and look, like he almost didn't, because it is a quick shot that Kako has. But Bobrovsky has time to get across and still get there to make a save, and your angle is a little bit difficult on that as well. So I get wanting to spread things out and create an opening and create the illusion that Gustafsson could go up the middle, but I just thought that play, he could have been a little bit closer there. That one is what it is. But the point of that was that Bobrovsky made a good save on it, and then he makes a really big save with no time left on the clock in the first period on that power play, where Zibanejad gets the one-timer chance. I think it's Trocheck who's parked right at the side of the goal. Bobrovsky is able to get across, make a big save. If it's 1-1 going into the second period from a Rangers standpoint, that is a massive boost. You were just outplayed. Your power play comes through. This is a chance. It's a new game. All we have to do is play 40 good minutes, and we're coming out of game one with a win. Instead, the save is made, and it remains a Florida Panthers 1-0 lead and keeps the shutout intact. There were a couple times where it got a little all over the place for Bobrovsky. He is going to do that. It is now up to the Rangers to take advantage of that in this series. And for New York, they can be better. I have been critical of the Rangers this postseason. It is, I promise, and there was a New York guy who felt a little bit frustrated in the comments, a big Mark Messier fan. But the reason that I critique is because I care. I'm not a diehard Rangers fan or anything like that, but I have said, like, sports are better when the New York teams are going, right? Like, I can obviously do without the Yankees, but it's fun when the Garden is going, and it's the Rangers, and it's the Knicks, and they're cruising, right? And I like a lot of pieces on this Rangers team a lot, and so I want to see this Rangers team do well, and I think they can do well, and they can certainly do better. Like, look, they didn't play their best game, and it was still 1-0 with 3 minutes left, and you don't love your game, that's an okay spot to build off of. Too many turnovers, too many missed opportunities. This Rangers team is better than what they showed in game one. Now that they know what they are expecting from the Florida Panthers, I do think they'll be better here in game two. Now that they know Like, they've played the Panthers, obviously, quite a bit in the regular season, but this is a different animal. Now that they are ready for that physicality that they haven't seen in the first two rounds of this playoffs, now that they're ready for some of the speed that the Panthers can bring to them as well, and now that they've seen this defensive attack, I would venture to say that Peter Laviolette and this Rangers team are going to be in a much better position to take advantage of things in game two. Also, you didn't get a great game from Shesterkin. Like, overall, he made some excellent saves, and he is not the reason they lost this game, right? Like, he could have been perfect, and they'd still be playing because they didn't have a goal. That first goal, you need that save. That is one that I would have killed Freddie Anderson for. And if it's on the other end, it's like, well, it's Bobrovsky, man. Like, can you trust this guy? But overall, like, Shesterkin's going to stop those most of the time. He just misses on that one. And then that is a brutal turnover on the 2-0 goal that leads to Verhaeghe just playing it off of the wall, centering it off of Lafreniere and in. And at that point, it's curtains. Like, you can't have those two plays against this Panthers team. I said before, the Rangers are going to have to be close to perfect. And in game one, they weren't. And they still almost got away with it. So you feel like they are going to, I feel like they're going to be able to find their stride a little bit better here in game two. One more quick NHL note. Sheldon Keefe is coming on as the New Jersey Devils head coach. It's an intriguing move. Like, I don't think Keefe did an amazing job with the Leafs, but I don't think coaching was the big problem out in Toronto. And he takes over a team that is so close. Like, I felt like they were a defender and a goalie away from being a cup contender this year. That's how good I thought they were. They have so much talent on the offensive side of things, and the high-end talent on that blue line is phenomenal, and it's another year of development for all of these young kids, and, like, playoff time, it's a different story, but Keefe has been able to get quite a lot out of some talented young players in the past, so I think that this is an all-right hire for the Devils, and I think this is an interesting spot for Sheldon Keefe to kind of prove, like, hey, look, it wasn't my fault. Everything that happened out there in Toronto, look what I've done with this young, talented team. And look, like, there is absolutely a world where this Devils team surpasses the Leafs next season. So this could be moving on up for Sheldon Keefe. For the Devils, I don't really think coaching was the answer. I don't think it was part of the solution out there, but I don't think it was part of the problem. They just needed saves, quite frankly, and that this team would have been good. So they really are the interesting team of the offseason. For me, I think they need to go out and get, you see the Flames jersey behind me, I think they need to go out and get Jacob Markstrom. I think that has to be target number one for this Devils team. I guess UC Saros would work as well. But yeah, so they don't mess around with, like, Shelovs or one of the other, like, oh, well, no, it's actually this young goalie who's been a backup, but now look how good he's going to be. I think you need to get out there and get a legitimate number one. Don't mess around, because the rest of this team is championship caliber. They could reunite Tanev and Markstrom again in New Jersey, and I would maybe pick them to win the division. That's how good I think the rest of the talent on this team really is. Let's shift gears now. The Canadian Football League season is rapidly approaching, and we're going to continue our CFL preview today looking at the overvalued teams in the Canadian Football League. Okay, so yesterday we did the most talented teams in the CFL. Today, we are doing the most overvalued teams in the Canadian Football League. And it starts with the Calgary Stampeders. Their over-under is at 7. This was a team that I don't think was very good a season ago. And I don't think they got better. And I think that the league kind of got better around them. So, I don't know. I don't know where all the wins are coming from for this team this season. I have said before, I don't trust the quarterback situation there. And again, some of the other pieces going around them haven't done that well. I was stalling there, obviously. This was a 6-win team last year. Where's the better coming from? It wasn't from free agency. They had a pretty good draft, but free agency, they didn't do anything. And you look around them, the teams that they finished ahead of in the standings, they beat Saskatchewan on the tiebreaker. Saskatchewan, I'm assuming, is going to have better quarterback health this year than number one and number two options, both going down with injury. And Edmonton has a significantly better quarterback situation than they had a season ago. So I don't know where seven or eight wins is coming from. Over means 8-10. That this, at no point does this team look like an 8-10 team to me. The second most overvalued team is the Hamilton Tiger Cats, the fifth best odds to win the Grey Cup at +800. I hate the quarterback situation. I think last year was kind of it for this team, and they didn't get anywhere close. I thought it was an uninspired group. Maybe coaching change is all you need, but I think the world of Orlando Steinauer as a football coach. And so I don't see where it's coming from with this Hamilton team. The Ticats finished at 8-10 a season ago. And so, like, fifth best odds does put you technically in the back half, but still just 8-1 to win the Grey Cup. It feels high to me for Hamilton. And at number one, I have Winnipeg. They are +215 to win the Grey Cup right now. Very good team. Very deep team, obviously. But they have taken some hits with retirements and free agents and whatnot. They're also kind of an aging football team. Should they be the favorites to win the Grey Cup? Maybe. Like, you can make an argument. Like, it's basically going to come down to, once again, who gets home field advantage in the West and who can come away with the win in the West final between them and BC. In my opinion, to be the favorites anyway for the Grey Cup. We saw how that worked out last year in Montreal. But to be a 2-1 favorite to win the Grey Cup, even in a 9-team league, is just astounding to me. So Winnipeg, to me, is the most overvalued team in the Canadian Football League right now. All right, that is going to do it for the program today. Y'all are awesome. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you are listening, make sure you have subscribed and make sure that you are leaving a review. If you are watching, make sure that you subscribe, make sure you like, and make sure you leave a comment. Let me know what you think. As I always say, I can't imagine I batted 1,000 today on things that y'all loved. So let me know what you thought in the comments. And if I did, be like, yeah, man, agreed with everything. Great show. Let me know in the comment section below. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. It's a Fights and Football Friday tomorrow. Can't wait. Here on Couch Potato Diary. Talk to you guys later. I'm out.
Save big on all your back-to-school needs, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean ground beef for $3.99 a pound with your card. Then get Oreo cookies, Chips Ahoy, or Kool-Aid jammers for $1.99 each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.